Welcome to An Hour to Give. In this time every week, we get together and speak about philanthropy and community and volunteerism. And this week, we're going to talk about all of them. My very first guest is Senator Terry Mercer. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I think it's a really great opportunity because, as some of us know, certainly in the philanthropic world, that the Senate just released a report called Catalysts for Change, a roadmap to a stronger charitable sector. And I know this has been something we've been working on for a couple of years. Senator Mercer, what's been your involvement in the report?
Well, I chaired the committee, and I moved the motion to establish the committee. When I was appointed to the Senate in 2003, one of the things I promised myself was that in my tenure that I would try to initiate a study into the charitable sector and volunteers, because I've worked in the sector most of my adult life, and I realized that there was a need for us to have a discussion about the sector. I mean, in reality, we've ignored the sector for many years, and it's been 20 years since there was a comprehensive federal focus on the charitable sector, and that was the Voluntary Sector Initiative. And it's been over 50 years since the Income Tax Act provisions related to charities were reviewed. About time we had a look at it. I would think it's the things have changed significantly in 50 years and in 20 years.
So it's, absolutely.
And what I thought that one of my hopes was that we could do a detailed study, and also in the recommendations that we would make some recommendations that would put government on notice that there's some changes that need to happen, and if they make the changes, it would be for the better, for the betterment of the sector and the betterment of Canadians, to serve them better.
Agreed. And I think, you know, when our listeners here at 1310 News are hearing An Hour to Give every week, they're getting to hear about really incredible stories of impact. And a lot of times it's a smaller charity really making a difference on a shoestring budget, as well as opportunities for donors to hear about maybe a new charity that they haven't been involved with, or really understand a little bit more about the charitable sector. And that's why I thought today was a really good opportunity to sort of hear about it from a donor's perspective. What do you think in the report is the most important piece if someone's listening and they're a donor to maybe four or five charities that they really are attracted to?
Well, I think there are a couple of very major points, and it depends on who's listening. If you're a very small charity, we've made some recommendations that we think are important to them. One very simple one is that we've made a suggestion that the issue of having volunteers, if you're a volunteer in this country and you volunteer for a charity, charities, you normally have to have a police check to verify that you are not some bad person. And this even happens on Parliament Hill. If I have a volunteer in my office, and I do have volunteers who come to my office and help me do my work, they have to have a police clearance and initiative force. Well, this is a bit of a burden for very small charities. So, one of the recommendations we've suggested is that we find a way to make this easier for small charities, and that means that we've asked recommended the public safety minister work with provincial and territorial ministers and the Canadian Chiefs of Police to seek ways to alleviate the financial burden on low budget organizations for needed police checks on volunteers. That's a very simple one, but that's for small charities. But all of the recommendations affect all charities, and I think it's important that the fact that we have been so long in getting to this point where we've had this study, that we're not going to be able to judge the effect of the study until we have a review, continue to have a review. And as a matter of fact, one of the recommendations is that we have regular reviews of the sector so that we don't have to wait 20 and 50 years for review. Another major change is recommending moving the appeal process from one court to another, and that's a bit of a technical one, but when we analyzed it and asked questions of people, of witnesses, it was one that had some universal support. We also need to remember that many of the charities that we're talking about are very small. I remember when I first got in the business, I became the executive director of the Kidney Foundation of Nova Scotia. And I was the only full-time employee, and I had a part-time assistant who actually lived in another city. So, and I worked out of my basement, and that's not unusual in the sector.
Right.
And that's how many small charities work now. That the Kidney Foundation of Nova Scotia is much larger now. It's I think they're up to 2 or 3 employees now, but that's almost 50 years ago. But they've made progress and are raising more money than I did, and that's a good thing. There is so many changes happening, and not only in the sector, but in business in general. I mean, the fact that you're in Ottawa and I'm sitting in a hotel room in Halifax, that technology didn't exist when I first got into business 50 years ago.
Right. I think, too, when I think about, how far we've come to your point, I think about it through the donor lens. And what changes would donors find through this report, maybe in future, in terms of their giving?
Well, I think number one is that they would donors should feel more report were acted on by government, and they follow all of our recommendations. Donors should feel much more comfortable with where their money is going, but also the recognition that the money is being spent properly. Some of the restrictions that are put on charities made some sense when they started, but in today's world it's entirely different. There's no anticipation of GoFundMe programs like we have now,
right.
or emergency response. So you take, for example, the tragedy in Saskatchewan with the hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the millions of dollars that was raised. That was never anticipated by the laws that were there, and now that that they've raised all of that money and there was no real structure to the group raising it and spending it, you need to have structures in place that will help the donors feel comfortable, and also make sure that the people in receipt of the help from charities or from these types of events.
Remind us, Senator Mercer, what the process was and who you engaged in this process to establish the eventual 42 recommendations coming out of the charitable sector report.
Yes, well, we had 24 public hearings. We had 160 witnesses, and then including government officials, legal and policy experts, funders, donors, volunteers, frontline workers, and board members of various charities. But we also did some different things. We initiated an electronic consultation, an e-consultation, if you like, where we had over 695 people respond to this, and from every province and territory in the country. This was the first time that the Senate has tried anything like this. We were very excited about the responses, and so what we wanted to do was to make sure that we. Reached out and consulted with as many people as possible. And indeed, when we filed the report with the Senate prior to our press conference that we had, we again called on all of the people who were witnesses and who had presented to us. We gave them a special briefing before we had the press conference, and gave them a sneak peek at what we were recommending, and asked them to help us spread the word. And indeed, the follow-up has been absolutely terrific within the sector. People have shared the recommendations, generally speaking, the recommendations have been well received.
Senator Mercer, we're going to just break for a minute, and we want to come back and chat more about the Catalyst for Change, a roadmap to a stronger charitable sector. We ask you to stay with us on An Hour to Give. Welcome back to An Hour to Give, and I've been chatting with Senator Terry Mercer, and we've been chatting about a roadmap to stronger charitable sector, which of course is a report that was released from the Senate recently. And thanks again so much, Senator Mercer, for joining me.
Happy to be here.
And Senator Mercer, one of the recommendations that I really was thrilled to see was a recommendation regarding boards. And one of them is that the diversity, the representation on the boards of directors be also reported on through the government documents that we would send in as charities. And those would be based on the existing employment equity guidelines. How important was that recommendation for you when you saw that come through?
Well, I think the importance is that every charity is always anxious to make sure that they're reflective of the communities that they serve, and that means to make sure that they're inclusive and that they're diverse. And diversity means different things to different people, depending on what the charity's role is in the world or and where they're located in the world. Diversity is not what you may think it is, because if it's an organization providing service to Indigenous people, it would be important to have Indigenous people involved in the board process.
Right.
If it's to provide services to new Canadians, it'd be important to have new Canadians involved in the decisions, but also have experts who understand immigration, et cetera, involved. That's a question. But one of the problems we've always had is that all the charities that I've ever been involved in or associated with or heard at various meetings I've been at, they all talk about diversity, but nobody knows how to measure it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what our recommendation says is quite simply that the federal government, who requires charities to report to them through a couple of different forms, through the Canada Revenue Agency, that the federal government incorporate a diversity question on the report, so that we can now have some data, because we have no real data. We talk about diversity. Every board I've ever been involved in, you know, we've always been trying to be conscious of our diversity. You don't want a bunch of white men sitting around talking about things, or a bunch of white women sitting around talking about things, or a bunch of any group sitting around talking about things. You need to, if you're going to serve the community isn't made up of just one group.
The other point that was really, I was so thrilled to see, is that you talked about the sector and the high turnover in the not-for-profit sector. A lot of fundraisers, they move quickly from organization to organization, and that sustainability of the workforce for the charitable section, and there's certainly a recommendation about that.
That is true. I remember when I first got involved in the sector myself, and I started to move from one charity to another. My mother, who was always concerned about my well-being and my future, always said, "Well, are you ever going to settle down?" And my mother's question always was, "What are you going to get a pension?"
Right.
And worried about her little boy. That is a very real concern because of the nature of the sector. People do move fairly frequently, usually from smaller charities to a larger charity and moving up the line. I mean, I started, as I mentioned earlier, as the executive director of the Kidney Foundation in Nova Scotia, one person, one and a half people in our office, and I ended up at some of the larger charities. I mean, I was vice president of financial development of the YMCA of Greater Toronto, the third largest YMCA in the world. So, which at that time it probably employed about 1,500 people in the Greater Toronto area, probably even larger now. But it's that kind of progress that happens in someone's career if they're lucky and if they're good at what they do. That puts a strain on the people through the process. So the charity was small and is growing. finds a really good executive director or good worker, field worker, they're going to lose them.
Right.
Because of the fact that they can't, number one, they can't pay them enough. Number two, that they can't provide them with the benefits that would be attractive enough for them to stay, particularly if they're family people and they have they have a spouse and they have children. You know, the people are always anxious to make sure that they have some benefit. One of the recommendations we've made is that the government should be looking at, is there a way that we structure something so that these charities will have an opportunity to provide those kind of service to their employees, so that there is a little more stability for the professionals in the system, because everybody, I love this. Everybody says we need professional help, but nobody wants to spend the money to pay this professional
right.
help to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
This is a recognition of the fact that there is a need for professionals in the system. It is not the primary recommendation in the report, but it's a very important one, particularly to those people who work in the sector. And we have to remember that there are over 2 million people who are employed in the sector in Canada.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think that's a really important piece. We are a big percentage of the GDP. I mean, it's a really thriving sector, and we need to make sure that we have sustainability within the workforce for sure.
And it's really important that people recognize that even though you may not benefit directly from a charity today, but someone you know is benefiting from a charity today.
Absolutely.
And that could be anything from subsidized childcare to a food bank to a medical charity. I mean, I'm involved in the Ovarian Cancer Society in Canada. I've raised money for them every year, and they're walking in September. I'd encourage everybody who's listening to get out and walk in early September to help raise money for ovarian cancer. But this is important. All of the things that we do contribute to the well-being of Canadians.
And I think too, people are really surprised when I meet someone new and I explain what I do for a living, and I, you know, tell them about an accreditation like CFRE, Certified Fundraising Executive. People are really surprised that there is that kind of attention put on it. And my response always is, can you imagine if there wasn't? We need to have this as a professional sector.
Absolutely, and I, as you know, I am also a certified fundraising executive, although I'm not practicing my profession these days. It is very important that we set some standards too, so that I know that as a prospective employer of you, that you've met certain standards, and to have the certification of CFRE or the next level up, the ACFRE, that you've met certain requirements and are committed to certain standards that protect me as a donor, but also protect me as perhaps a board member of the charity you may be working for.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think it's really important through a donor lens as well, is when you're going to go work with a charity, that you're working with people that have got that sustainability as well and those accreditations, so they can also ensure that the accountability for the dollars as a donor you would put forward, that accountability piece is so key.
But the other key thing about using certification or having certification is it is a great incentive for young people who join the profession to say, you know, if after you've worked in the profession for 5 years, you qualify, you may qualify to apply for certification, write the very detailed exam that there is for certification, and that gives some stability to them to say, I am joining a profession. It's a place where I can build a career. The certification gives me some credibility, and as I always said, it's sort of like a union card. You know, people recognize that you've had some training, you've met certain standards, and it answers a whole bunch of questions about credibility without having to ask them.
Senator Mercer, we have about 30 seconds left. Can you tell me your dream out of this report? The report, of course, was tabled on June 20th. What is your dream moving forward?
Two things. My dream is that the government act on as many of the recommendations as possible. My dream between now and the end of October is that the political parties involved in the election campaign read our report, steal our ideas, and put them in their platforms.
I love it.
And we'll hold their feet to the fire after the election, no matter who wins, and say, you know, this is what we recommended. This is what you said you would do. Now let's see you do it.
I think it's great, and I've really appreciated your time today. Who else was with you on the Senate team as part of the committee?
Well, Senator Omnivar from Toronto was a deputy chair and did a good job. We had I don't have the list in front of me, but we had Senator Black from the Guelph area. We had Senator Duffy from Prince Edward Island. I'm trying to, I don't know. Forget
oh, that's
anybody.
Okay. No, yep. It's okay. I just wanted to, I guess my whole thing, you've sort of indicated there's been people all over the country, and they would have listened as well to people in their constituencies as well.
The key thing was that when we started, we said we're not going to exclude anybody from participating, and that's why we did the special survey that we did, and we reached out to people, and that's why when we filed our report, we reached out again.
Excellent.
And I'm told by Senate administration that this report has been the most downloaded report from the Senate website this year, and is closing in on being the most downloaded one in history. But it's got some time to go before it reaches that level.
That certainly speaks volumes. Senator Terry Mercer, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed our time together.
Thank you so much. Stay with us on An Hour to Give. We have more discussion on the charitable sector to come. Stay with us. Welcome back to An Hour to Give. I'm Sam LaPrade, and I'm joined by Ruth McKenzie. And Ruth is the president and CEO of CAGP, which is Canadian Association of Gift Planners. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been too long. This show's been going 18 months. How are you just coming in to see me today?
You tell me.
I know. I should have made it happen earlier.
There you go.
But we have today.
Yes, we do.
And we just chatted with the incredible Senator Terry Mercer, mm-hmm. and he's so passionate about our sector. And it's just so lovely to chat with him.
He's lovely.
So tell me a little bit about CAGP. I obviously know a lot about it because I love it so much. But tell our listeners the role CAGP would play in their lives as donors.
Well, we're a professional association, so we're a little bit removed from the day-to-day donors. We work with people who work with donors, both fundraisers, but also people who advise donors or clients on their wealth management, which may include managing their charitable giving and planning their charitable giving as well. And one of the giving strategies that people are probably most familiar with that we take the lead on is leaving a gift to a charity in your will. And it's a really transformative element of philanthropy, and often a time where everyday Canadians can feel the power of philanthropy by making a large and truly transformative gift to a cause they care about. So what we do is pretty special, actually.
It is. And I started my career in fundraising doing telethons, actually.
Okay.
Many, 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 many telethons. But then the next step I took was I worked as a legacy giving officer. Mm-hmm. And having those conversations with donors about leaving a legacy and really having them think about what they wanted to have happen with their money once they were gone, and making an impact to a small charity or maybe a charity that really touched their heart, is really one of the most amazing gifts I was given in terms of being a fundraiser.
It really is. And that's the beauty of people who do this work, that they really have an opportunity to enable people to make a difference through their will. To a cause they care about, and to be remembered, and to be remembered as a generous person. We often talk about it as achieving immortality through generosity, which is such a beautiful concept.
Absolutely. This report, of course, Catalyst for Change, mm-hmm. From the Senate that came down, we were chatting about all the different ways it impacted small charities and larger charities and, of course, staff. What are some of your biggest takeaways?
Well, we're really interested in the infrastructure that can support and enable charitable giving. And in particular by that, I mean the Income Tax Act and tax strategies that can maximize and amplify giving. And there were a number of recommendations in the report that we were really, really excited about as an organization. But there were also a number of recommendations that we were really excited about that are a little bit off mission for CAGP, but which are really important. Those recommendations around strengthening the charitable sector at large in terms of data collection or volunteer resources or human resources. So that's really great as well. And I think that's what's the beauty of this report. But we were particularly interested in some of the focus on the tax strategies to give. And in particular, there was a recommendation around doing an overall analysis of the tax system to look at what's in place, what gaps are, what the opportunities are in terms of strategizing for tax measures that could really amplify a gift that someone wants to make and make an impact to a charity as well as to their tax bill at the end of the year.
Right. And I think both of those are really impactful mm-hmm. pieces. People want to be smart about their giving.
That's right.
And I loved some of the recommendations, as you did, about how we can make it easier for donors as well, but also supporting that infrastructure. Because I think supporting the infrastructure for the charitable sector does a couple of things. Creates a great place to work.
Yeah.
And maintain some of the talent. But it also, by having fundraisers that, you know, have these different outlets, it allows us an opportunity to raise more money. When we have, you know, I'm thinking back to when I worked for a small charity. I mean, the struggle just to look after that administration piece. And mm-hmm. we didn't have the technology that mm-hmm. for-profits had. So allowing, you know, the not-for-profit organizations to be on the same playing field as for-profits provides lots of great benefits.
That's right. And there were lots of recommendations in the report that speak to that as well.
For sure.
The other thing that I think we were really interested in is, you know, the work that we do is slightly more complex or sophisticated fundraising in terms of talking to people about not just giving gifts that are cash out of their bank account, but looking at their bigger financial health picture. And what are the assets that they have in place that they can donate and receive some real tax benefits that will enable them to give more, give better, and receive some benefit for that? And there were a couple of recommendations in there that we were really, really excited about that when I and others involved with CAGP presented to the Special Senate Committee spoke to, and those are related to making a gift from secondary real estate you may have and offsetting the capital gains tax that you would pay if you sell a secondary property, and then donate those proceeds to a charity. So we were really, really excited about that. Also, the opportunity to give private company shares to charities and to receive a benefit for that. That's a follow-up to several years ago, the opportunity to give publicly listed securities to charities and get a real tax advantage of doing that. So some of those ways that are a bit more creative that people can give, we saw recommendations that would further enable that and further complete the suite of assets that people can donate to charities.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, as a fundraiser, this radio show is just, you know, my baby. I love it so much. But the reality is I work in fundraising all day long when I'm not here on the air. And when I think about the opportunities to speak with donors, one of my favorite conversations with them, when they've showed interest in leaving a legacy, I'll say to them, would you consider 1%?
Right.
And everybody goes, oh, of course I can leave 1%. And starting off at this place where, you know, 1% makes sense. And then they think, well, you know what? My kids are actually really well off and they're set on a great path. And my grandkids are too. And I want to leave them, you know, X amount. Mm-hmm. But I think I can do 15%.
Right, right.
And those conversations to me have been the most joyful conversations I've had with donors because they almost come to those conclusions on their own.
That's right.
It's not something we as fundraisers have to say, you know, we need you to give us this amount of money because that's not what it's about. It's joyful giving and joyful getting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We often talk about, and you'd be familiar with this as well, Sam, is the concept of the charity child. So mm-hmm. say you've got two kids and you're looking at how to divide your estate up. Well, why don't you divide your estate into three? Take care of your kids and your grandchildren, of course. But maybe take an equal share and think about a charity or a cause that, that you gave to or you've been interested in, and you can give that way. And it's really, really exciting, particularly when they're talking with an estate planner who can help them structure their gift in such a way that they're going to get a tax advantage of making that gift in their will that's going to enable them to give more to the charity and leave more to the kids rather than saddling your kids with a nice estate gift, but also a tax bill, too, that often comes along with that.
That's
a strategy to kind of divert some of that money. And I don't want to say divert it from government in terms of, I think most people in Canada are happy to pay their fair share of taxes. But this is a way that you can deploy some of your wealth to in a way that you're interested in and meets your own personal goals.
And I think it's about that. It's about your own values.
Absolutely.
And having those represented.
Absolutely.
Ruth, what advice would you have for our listeners who are very generous here at 1310 News? What advice would you have for them if they wanted to leave a gift in their will, the steps they may take?
Well, the step is to just do it. Make an appointment with your lawyer and think about a charity or cause that you care about. Talk to your family about it. Talk to your kids about it. Talk to your spouse about it. And think about what are the charities or charity that you'd like to support. And make an appointment with your lawyer and adjust your will. The other thing you can do that's really, really simple, you don't even have to go to a lawyer, call your financial advisor and say, I've got all of this money sitting in an RRSP. I want to designate a portion of that RRSP to a charity. You'll fill out a form. It's one page. You'll tick a couple boxes. You'll sign it. And there it is. And when you pass away, your that portion of your RRSP or your RIF, your income fund, will automatically go to a charity. Super simple and really impactful.
Brilliant. We had an opportunity to ask Senator Mercer a little bit earlier too, how he hopes the report goes in terms of moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you to dream with me too. What do you hope happens with the report now that it's been tabled?
Well, I certainly hope that there is action taken on a number of these recommendations. Approximately one quarter of the recommendations were redirected to the soon-to-be-established Standing Committee on the Charitable Sector. That committee is in development, but it hasn't yet been struck. And with that committee in place that could take the lead on a number of these recommendations, that's a great way to get this started. And so
Excellent.
I'd say, get the committee going. For us in the sector, we need to put our heads together and present to government why it's so important to implement these recommendations and make sure that we're talking to political parties, whoever may be in power after our fall election, and see what next steps are there.
Perfect recommendations. Ruth McKenzie, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for representing CAGP today.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us on An Hour to Give. We're going to be speaking with a representative from AFP. Stay with us. Welcome back to An Hour to Give, and we're joined by Jessica Robluski. How are you?
Hi, I'm great, Sam. How are you?
I'm excellent. And Jessica, of course, is the chair of AFP Canada Government Relations Committee. So this, basically the Senate report, would be really important to you, Jessica. What are your first takeaways?
Well, I think AFP Canada was really happy with what came out of the report. In terms of having our voice heard, we felt that the voice of fundraisers and the voice of Canadians who benefit from philanthropy was definitely reflected in that. Just speaking in terms of our advocacy priorities, they were all there, asking for data on the charitable sector, asking for there to be a home in government for the charitable sector, asking for there to be some consideration about exempting donations of private shares and having that exempt from capital gains tax, as well as looking at having non-environmental real estate, there being some sort of donation consideration for that as well. So we were really happy overall with the report and looking forward to seeing how can we make this into a reality to benefit Canadians.
I think that's a really good point, because when I asked both Ruth McKenzie from CAGP and Senator Mercer to dream for me about what they see in terms of the report moving forward, they both said the same thing. It's great to have this report, but let's see how we can move forward and really impact not only the charitable sector, but of course, most importantly, donors and the impact we're making within our own communities.
Well, exactly. And I know AFP Canada is working hard with other groups like CAGP to come together as a whole sector and say, these are the recommendations that are the most important to us and that we feel would benefit the most Canadians. So how do we make those actually happen? And so we're grateful for the report, but now it's how do we make this into reality?
So let's tell everybody, AFP, Association of Fundraising Professionals, of course, I love being a member of that group and really obviously working with my colleagues. Some people, you know, that I speak with, you know, I meet somebody at a cocktail party and I tell them I'm in fundraising and everyone goes, oh, I don't even know what that means. Like, you know, so I love being able to share that there is an association. There's a couple of associations, of course, CAGP, as we mentioned, and AFP that look after people in the sector and is an advocacy group, like you mentioned as well, but really trying to take the sector to the next level. What are some of the biggest takeaways you have for someone that may want to join AFP?
Well, I think it's important to know that the Association of Fundraising Professionals stands and helps all fundraisers. And so we are a professional association of both individuals and organizations that work together to generate philanthropic support. We exist to promote ethical fundraising and philanthropy, and we do that by offering professional education to our members, networking opportunities. We fund research on fundraising as well as philanthropy, and then we advocate at different levels of government to make sure that social good is happening and that fundraisers are helping to facilitate that.
Well, that's a really good point. I think when we look at, you know, the opportunities for donors to know that these organizations exist, I think it would give, it certainly gives me, you know, some reassurances knowing that the sector has a sort of an overlying body that looks at things like ethics and accountability, et cetera.
Well, I think that's interesting that you bring up ethics, because that's something a lot of people don't know about the Association of Fundraising Professionals, that we're one of the only groups that has an enforceable code of ethics. So there is a code of ethics that all members must sign. In Canada, there's about 3,500 people who belong to the Association of Fundraising Professionals. We all sign that, and you can actually be kicked out of the association if you don't follow ethical behavior.
Absolutely. And I think that's really, really great for donors to hear as well. In terms of AFP and professional development, you know, there's conferences. Of course, there's AFP Congress that happens every year. What are some of the opportunities for maybe someone that's listening that may want to get into this sector and sort of investigate a little bit? Can you give them any suggestions on how they might do that aside from maybe attending a conference? Maybe they want to look at some resources.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend that they look up AFP Global. That's our website, and there is a Canadian-specific website that you can find off of that in both English and French. And then look at, depending on where you're located, we do have 20 chapters across Canada. So depending on where you are, you might want to look at going out to some of those events or reaching out to the volunteer board members like myself who can help direct you to the right location depending on what you're looking to get out of it. Is it education? Are you simply looking to understand more about what the profession is and get involved, or do you just want to know more because you volunteer with charities or nonprofits and you want to help fundraise for causes that you care about? So there's many different ways, and it's just knowing, you know, that you can reach out to AFP and we'll direct you in the right direction.
Let's look through the donor lens now. Why would AFP be important for donors, maybe specifically in terms of the Bill of Rights?
Yeah, so I think it's setting that that groundwork for donors to let them know that this is a profession and that we do have standards of behavior. And that goes, one, for fundraisers, but also in terms of the Donor Bill of Ethics, what fundraisers are willing to do for donors. And that just sets the pattern of behavior and the level of professionalism that we feel we need in our profession, so that donors can feel comfortable that they are supporting causes they care about and feel good to know that their money is being spent in the way that they wish it is.
When you look at the report that came out from the Senate on charitable giving, of course, Catalyst to Change, what excites you most as a fundraiser?
That's a good question, Sam. I think what excites me the most is that it's going to allow us to strengthen the sector, and I see that in two different ways. One is by promoting inclusion, diversity, equity, and access, which is a huge priority for AFP Canada, but also myself, and just knowing that having a sense of the sector and seeing how inclusive and diverse and equitable and accessible we are to fundraisers, but also to donors and to Canadians. But the second piece is that culture of giving, and I think that's so important as, you know, we as fundraisers know the impact that the dollars we raise has on all of these causes that are so important. But Canadians might not know how big a role the charitable sector plays in their everyday life, considering that we're 8.5% of the country's GDP and that we employ 2.4 million Canadians. And I think the message is that we are here for you to support you and make your life better. But how can we help to facilitate that more, not just in terms of educating and making people aware of it, but how do we strengthen that culture of giving with Canadians so that when you need to access services, that they're there for you and you don't have to worry about paying for them, whether that's in terms of education or health or social services. And the charitable sector is what makes all of that happen. And so as a fundraiser, that's why I love what I do, that we can help other people, whether or not they know. That's besides the point. It's just that we exist to help people when they need help.
I think that's beautifully said. And when I think about what we do as fundraisers, I often think about changing or saving lives. And in many cases, lives are saved definitely through some of the work that we've done. Because I always think about it too, that we're empowering people. You know, I was not talented enough to become a doctor, but boy, I can raise money. So people that do have that talent are able to save lives. And boy, you know, I don't have the patience probably to be a social worker, but boy, I can certainly help somebody change other people's lives. And so I've always seen us as sort of that matchmaker, if you will, to be able to change people's lives and really take their lives to the next step. And to your point, we don't sometimes realize how much charity is involved in our lives, whether it be, you know, Senator Mercer mentioned too, maybe it's subsidized caregiving for children or even for seniors. But everything in our lives can sometimes be taken right back to the charitable sector.
Well, exactly. And I think, yes, it's important for us as AFP Canada to, you know, show that to Canadians. But I think it's also important to know that we can raise all the money we want, but there's going to continue to be a greater need if we don't address the underlying problems. And to me, as a volunteer and a member with AFP Canada, that's why I got involved with the Government Relations Committee, because we can actually make change at that system level when we're able to influence policy. And that's why I think it's so important and it's so exciting that this report is out. And now, you know, the pressure is on us as AFP Canada and other groups that are seen as kind of the sector umbrellas of the charitable sector. And how do we move this forward? And so I'm so excited to work more closely with Ruth at CAGP and with Bruce at Imagine Canada to move this forward and really, really make the most of it. We don't want to see this as a missed opportunity.
For sure. And I think I heard both from Senator Mercer and from Ruth McKenzie. This is an opportunity. The timing of this report is actually really good. Going into a fall election, October 21st, this is a great opportunity as fundraisers and donors to look at some of these recommendations and see what party has them in their portfolio and their platform and really hold them to some of the commitments that they're making to this sector.
Yeah, and as part of our government relations activities with AFP Canada, we've been, for the past couple of years, going across Canada and meeting with MPs and in our ridings, a lot of members actually from AFP across Canada, and getting a sense of where they stand on our priorities. So whether it was the home and government for the charitable sector, or if it was money for more data on the nonprofit sector to make better informed decisions for policies. And it was interesting how there were definitely some party divides, but overall I would say when you sat down face-to-face with an MP, as a human being, they understood that this was going to make the sector better and stronger and what the benefits were going to be for Canadians.
Excellent.
Now it's how do we amplify that, right? And how do we move it forward at the overall level with the federal government?
Excellent. Excellent point. Thank you so much to Jessica Wroblewski for joining me today. And thank you for listening. And I hope you found out some information today that you may not have known. And we appreciate you joining us on An Hour to Give.